This is Digital Story Podcast number 652, September 11th, 2018. Today's theme is the Fujifilm XF10, a remarkable compact. I'm Derek Story. It may seem crazy to create an ultra-compact camera to go up against premium smartphones, but no one ever accused Fujifilm of being timid. And after the first dozen shots with this 9-ounce camera, I realized that the engineers at Fujifilm had worked their magic once again. Join me today as I explain why the XF10 should be in every nimble photographer's pocket. So this is one of those shows where I'm going to have to curb my enthusiasm. I can tell you that right now. I have written my review here for the XF10. And I'm very excited about it, and I'll try to stay away from hyperbole and superlatives and all that good stuff. But I will tell you that this is a camera that I really like, and as a nimble photographer, a camera that I think I'm going to love as I continue to use it. Let's dig into why I feel this way. We're going to start out with the size of the camera. So for example, if my iPhone 10 were the dimensions of a box, the Fujifilm XF10 would fit inside that box with room left over. So it is truly a pocketable camera, not an Arctic jacket pocket or a giant cargo pants pocket, but just a regular pocket. It will fit inside of it. And at 9 ounces, it's not going to make that pocket strain or sag any at all. Yet inside this camera, there is a 24 megapixel APS-C CMOS sensor that is 14 times larger than the typical smartphone chip. It has a razor-sharp f2.8 Fujinon aspherical lens, low-energy Bluetooth 4.1, and Wi-Fi. And all of those work together in some very important ways that I'll explain here in a minute. So even though the images are superior to my iPhone 10, this camera wasn't designed to humble it. Rather complement it. And that's what's so key about the XF10. This is not like any other camera in the Fujifilm lineup. The designers had something very specific in mind when they created this camera. They wanted something for mobile photographers, travel photographers, photographers on the go who were used to using their smartphones, but who wanted a little bit more. And a little bit more starts with the sensor. This is a crazy sensor. Now, this is not the X-Trans sensor that that we normally see in Fujifilm cameras. This is the Bayer-type sensor with no low-pass or AA filter. And it is a very good sensor, I'd have to tell you. And, you know, there are advantages and disadvantages to the sensor not being X-Trans. One of the advantages is it's just going to be easier for RAW compatibility. It's going to be easier to decode those RAW files. And we should see adoption by all the major software players rather quickly. Let's get back to this notion about the compatibility with the iPhone or any smartphone that you're using by any brand. Okay. After you pair the two devices, in my case the iPhone, they're really like brothers. In a sense. And this is another key design aspect of this camera. Again, it's designed to work with your smartphone, not replace it. They're like brothers in the sense that the iPhone is providing real-time GPS data to all the images that I shoot with the Fujifilm camera. So they're all geotagged. Now, this is happening via Bluetooth 4.1. It's a low-energy version of Bluetooth. And in the shooting that I've done, I haven't really noticed any battery drain on either the iPhone or the camera. And by the way, the camera has a very nice battery in it that has a good battery life that hangs in there quite well during, you know, all these things that we're doing, all these electronic things that we're doing. In addition to providing, you know, real-time location data to all the photos. So all my photos with this camera are geotagged. It's always listening for downloads from the XF10, the iPhone is, and it's very easy to move images, you know, from one device to another and then publish online. You can even have that done automatically if you wish, if you just want the images to flow, or if you want to be more in control and decide which images you want to send over, you can do it that way as well. Either way, because they're always in contact with one another, all I have to do is go to my iPhone, launch the Fuji app, and say, hey, I want to retrieve some photos. They start talking to each other, and very shortly, I have those images on my iPhone where I can continue to work with them or send them up online. The iPhone can also serve as a remote release and command center for the XF10. So having both of these devices with you, in my case, one in each pocket, suddenly gives me a whole lot of photo power. You know, not only can I take pictures with my iPhone, but I can take, you know, really crazy pictures with the Fujifilm as well. The imagery from this camera is excellent. There are vibrant colors, superb detail, and the resolution on the JPEGs is 6,000 by 4,000. 6,000 by 4,000 is a resolution, and of course I shoot in fine mode on these JPEGs. So that's more resolution than my EM1 Mark II that weighs in at 5,184 by 3,888. So that's even more than my professional camera that I'm using. The XF10 has all these tricks up its sleeve. So it has time-lapse, HDR, plus it has things that I really like that are more in modern cameras. And I talked about this a little bit with the Panasonic T7. It has 4K burst, which is just crazy fun and useful too. Plus it has the Fuji film simulations, which I love. I fell in love with those when I had the X10, which I still have. I probably will never get rid of that camera because I like it so much. So there's a little overview here of, you know, why I'm excited about, you know, this device, having something so small, so light, with such a big sensor, with such a sharp lens, and then with all these electronics that work with the workflow I'm already using, it gets the blood coursing. By the way, it comes in two models. It comes in a black model, which I'm sure some photographers will prefer, but then it comes in this champagne with a leather trim model with a leather wrist strap. For me, there's no comparison. You know, I have the champagne model. That's what I'm shooting with. And the black model looks sharp, but for me, wow, this is just a gorgeous camera. And, you know, that's the other thing about it, because there's really only one other camera in this particular classification, and that would be the Ricoh GR2, which is a fine camera. Oh my gosh, classic camera, right? Cult camera. Problem is they haven't upgraded to GR3 yet. I think they should have. They have such a good thing going with that camera. I don't know why they're dragging their feet on producing the update. But the one thing that, well, this camera has a couple things on it. One of them is that it's smaller. The other is that it has more megapixels, 24 versus 16. And the third one, for those of us that are superficial, is that it is so much prettier. It really is. All right, let's take a look at these specs, and that'll give me a chance to talk about the features at the same time. Again, 24.2 megapixel APS CMOS sensor, so it's the Bayer type with no low-pass filter. So it's not X-Trans, it's a Bayer type sensor, and it's very nice. I've been looking at these images, 100% and 200%. They are handsome. Has a Fujinon 18.5 millimeter f/2.8 fixed lens, and the fixed lens is very important because what Fuji does and what Ricoh did with the GR2 and so forth is that the lens is a perfect mate for the camera and the sensor. So, you know, they don't have to design for interchangeable lenses. They're designing for this lens with this sensor, and you can really tell. Now, it's a 28 millimeter equivalent, and you would say, wow, you know, that's too wide for me all the time. I said this when I reviewed the GR2. I thought so too, until I started shooting with it, and then I'm realizing that it's brilliant to go wide because you can always narrow in through either using the digital teleconverter or through cropping, but you can't go wider. And the other thing that I've noticed is that, especially for those of us that are mobile photographers and shoot with smartphones a lot, We're used to having access to a wide view. It allows us to get close to this world. We have enough, camera width to bring that world in and, see more of it. So I think a lot of us are already used to shooting that way. And in that sense, the Fujifilm, XF10 feels very natural. And I'll tell you an anecdote on this. When I was reviewing the Sigma cameras, the ones that had the fixed lens on it, and what they did is they came out with three different models, one with a wide-angle lens, one with a normal, and one with a semi-telephoto. And I thought I was really going to like the one with the normal lens, the 50-millimeter equivalent, because I shoot a lot of film cameras at 50-millimeter, and it's, one lens that I do enjoy a lot. But when I had it in my digital camera as the only option, it was too narrow. And I just felt like I was missing a lot of shots that I wanted because of the 50-millimeter lens. And I ended up liking the Sigma with the wider lens much better. And of course, then I had the same experience with the GR2 with the wide lens. And I'm having the same experience with this one. The 28-millimeter, I'm telling you, is not too wide, at least not for the way a lot of us are shooting these days. If, however, you do want a little tighter cropping, it has both a 35-millimeter and a 50-millimeter digital teleconverter. Now, I used to say, and a lot of people still say, never use this function, right? Olympus changed my mind on that with their digital teleconverter, their 2X one, that is just so good. It's so very good. So I said, I'm going to keep an open mind about this one. And I did a test. I did a couple tests, actually. And I shot, at 28-millimeter, which is the native focal length, and then the 35-millimeter and the 50-millimeter settings. And I have them set up on the rotating command ring, so it's just like a zoom. And I have to say that both the 35-millimeter and the 50-millimeter digital teleconverters are quite good. They're very good. The file sizes aren't as big, so I'm shooting fine JPEGs. And, they come in close to 7 megabytes each at the native focal length. And they go down about a megabyte for the 35 millimeter and the 50 millimeter. So, there is less information in the file. You go from, 7 megabytes down to 6 megabytes or even 5.5 megabytes. So there is some loss. And when I zoomed in and you're looking at fine lines, you're looking at type and things like that in the distance, when you zoom in, if you're a discerning eye, you can tell the difference. So there is, some trade-off at using these. That being said, in everyday photography, I really don't think it's going to make much of a difference at all, and you would have a very hard time telling. And the thing about it is, with this digital teleconverter, the file sizes are still the same. In other words, you still get that full resolution at 6,000 pixels by 4,000 pixels just at a 35 millimeter or 50 millimeter focal length. So I plan on using it. Now, the one thing I will tell you is that if you shoot in RAW, it's not available. The digital teleconverter works with JPEGs only. And right now I'm going to tell you in my tests. And what I did was I did an iPhone 10 shot. I did a fine JPEG with this camera, and I did RAW with this camera. And then I had to process the RAW files in the SilkyPix RAW processor offered by Fuji, because that's the only RAW processor right now for this camera because it's so new. But I will tell you that the JPEGs are outstanding. And in fact, at least with this one RAW processor, I liked the JPEGs better than the RAW files. And that really surprised me. This is one of those things where I had to keep an open mind, because right away you're expecting the RAW files to be so much better. On my Olympus cameras, the JPEGs are fantastic, but the RAW files are even better. In this case, with this one RAW converter I had access to, the JPEGs were amazing. I plan on shooting in JPEG mode probably 90% of the time with this camera. They're that good. Let's keep rolling here. So it has a 3-inch, 1,000,000 dot LCD, and it's a touch screen. And there's all sorts of cool things that you can do with this touch screen. Set focus point, zoom in. It even has 4 function swipes. The camera has 2 physical function buttons, but then you have 4 swipes that you can set for function modes also. It's a really beautiful touch screen. The images are great on it. It is oriented the right way so that when you wear polarized sunglasses and you're shooting horizontally in bright sun, you can read the touchscreen. You can compose your image just fine. It works great. So I was complaining about the Panasonic where when you held it horizontally with sunglasses on, you couldn't see the screen. You had to turn it vertically. This camera is the way that I like it, which is you can see everything horizontally. Vertically, then it will black out. Just a fantastic screen. I like it a lot. It has 11 film simulations, 19 advanced filters, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. It has 4K and full HD video recording, and the movies are quite good. The caveat on the 4K is that it's only at 15 frames per second. On the full HD recording, like I was recording movies, full HD movies, at 60 frames a second, and they look great. It has an external mic jack, but it's a 2.5 millimeter, so it's the smaller one. So chances are the lavalier mics that you may have now, you have to get an adapter. I have one on order from Amazon. It'll be here tomorrow. It'll just allow me to convert from the 3.5 millimeter to the 2.5 millimeter. But this little camera has an external mic jack and it has a microphone volume control in the menu. So we're talking about very easy interviewing with this camera between the lens and the ability to use an external microphone. And their .mov files, which are very easy to work with. I mean, this is really a pleasant surprise. So often we don't get a microphone jack. It just drives me nuts. They put one in this little guy. I'm jazzed about that. The flash, really sophisticated. It's a built-in flash. It even has rear curtain and slow sync on this little flash. And it's smart. It's a smart flash. It's not overexposing your subjects. A couple new features, snap focus and square mode. Snap focus is very interesting. The GR2 has this. It's great for street shooters. It eliminates the whole focusing thing. Basically, you're pre-setting everything. So it's either at 2 meters or 5 meters for snap focus. And it's easy to switch between the two settings. And then you just shoot. The camera instantly records the image. It doesn't have to focus. It doesn't have to do any of that stuff. Really good for quick photography. The only thing I will say is that if you set it in snap focus mode, then it's sticky even after you turn off the camera. So you got to remember to turn it off when you're done with it so you can go back to regular autofocus, which, by the way, on this camera, autofocus is fast. It works in low light. It is terrific. It is really, really strong autofocus on this camera. Mechanical and electronic shutter. Mechanical goes up to 1/4,000th of a second. The electronic shutter goes up to 1/16,000th of a second. Very little delay. I don't hardly notice any at all. And that's even when I'm not in snap focus mode. And then in the great Fuji tradition, it has two command dials, one command ring around the lens, a mode dial, two function buttons, two physical function buttons, and four more function swipes on the touchscreen. So for even though it's a little camera, you still have all these great physical controls. And there's a joystick on the back that I really like as well. Excellent battery life, and it has the NP95 battery. I haven't had any problems at all. It goes all day for me. And then I charge it at night when I'm done. So what does it not have? Well, there are a few things that it does not have. And some of these are going to be deal breakers for you, right? Depending on how stuck you are on these things. It doesn't have an articulating screen. Part of what they wanted to do was make this camera as small as possible. So it has a fixed back screen, not an articulating screen. The screen is viewable from a lot of different angles because of the way they designed it, but it does not move. It's fixed back. It does not have an electronic viewfinder. There's no room for it. So if that's a deal breaker for you, it is not on this camera. Does not have an accessory hot shoe. Okay, so no plugging in a flash that's probably bigger than the camera in the hot shoe. No accessory filter ring. The way that the lens cap snaps in, it actually snaps into the inner circle where the lens is, not the outer circle, because there's a very small lip there and there are no screw threads. So you can't put a filter on here. And in part, if you watch the way the camera operates when it focuses, you could see why, because that lens would come out and butt into the filter. And then, you know, believe it or not, those didn't bother me with this particular camera. If it was a bigger camera, I would want the articulating screen for sure, because I like that. This camera, it didn't bother me. But the one thing that I was disappointed about, it doesn't have the Acros film profile. So it has all the other Fuji film profiles, including classic chrome, which I really like, but it doesn't have the Acros film profile. Those of you that are Fuji shooters, you know why I'm disappointed. It's just this wonderful black and white film simulation, and they did not put it in here. They saved it for the premium cameras. That one smarted a little bit because I thought I was going to get all the current ones, right? But they didn't put that one in. Okay, so here we go. Bottom line on this. So if you want a 9-ounce finely machined, and it is beautiful, I mean, it is exquisitely designed camera, 24 megapixel APS-C sensor camera, this is the one. Right, this is the one if you want one that is 9 ounces or less. It's really the only game in town except for the Ricoh GR2. By the way, the Ricoh GR2, even though it's been out for quite a while, it costs $100 more. This one costs right now $499. The Ricoh GR2 is $599, and it doesn't have many of the modern features that this one has. I got this as a review model. You know, I work with B&H and they treat me so very well. You know, I asked them, I said, can you get me one to review? And they said, yes, we will take care of you. They sent me this camera. This is one of the earlier reviews of it. There's a few out there, but not too many. I'm going to have a really hard time sending this back. Chances are it won't go back. I'll buy it. Not only is it so much fun to shoot with, it's just so easy to carry with me. It's easier than any camera that I have to bring with me. And, the images are just gorgeous. Anyone who shoots Fuji knows how beautiful the images are. This one falls right in line with all the other great Fuji cameras. It's not for everyone, but it should be for practically every nimble photographer. It's worth a look. I have links to it, of course, in the show notes. Click on those links, take a look, and see what you think. You're going to be seeing a lot of shots on Instagram from me with this camera, I promise you. The Portfolio Box featured image. So if you've been over to our Facebook page lately, you may have noticed this really nice infrared photo by Dan Horton Czar as the featured banner. And that's because Dan was selected for our first featured Portfolio Box pro photographer. Now, that doesn't mean he's a pro photographer. It means he's using Portfolio Box Pro. And I have a directory of all of our TDS listeners who have submitted their Portfolio Box Pro sites. That directory, by the way, is posted. There's a link in the show notes so you can go see them for yourself. I go through those sites, and each week during the month of September, I'm going to pick a shot and feature it on our Facebook page. And it looks great. I mean, this infrared shot by Dan is terrific. And his name is there, and then also the link to his Portfolio Box site. All of that's there, so you can go check out the rest of his stuff. And I thought this is just a great way to showcase the photographers in our audience who are using this tool, this platform, to showcase their images. And that's exactly what they're doing. And I'll tell you, just to refresh, the reason why I like Portfolio Box so much is that, first of all, my images look great. They look great. This is not like looking at your pictures on Facebook or, you know, some other social platform. This platform is designed to make photography look beautiful, and your images will look as good here as anywhere else on the web, any tool on the web, and in my personal opinion, they will look better. Not only that, they look good on my mobile devices as well as my computer, because Portfolio Box sites are automatically designed for all the different viewing devices. As long as you have something that is in mass production, Portfolio Box is going to look good on there, okay? It's really easy to use. Without instruction, you can design a site and be up and running in just minutes. It is very intuitive, very simple, and it looks great. and it's affordable. I mean, there's a free plan and the pro version. The pros are where we're drawing from right now for our Facebook banner. But the pro version regular price is only $82 a year. If you go through the link on our TDS page, you know, and we have a portfolio box tile there. If you go through that, you get 20% off. Now, make sure you go through that link even if you're going to sign up for a free site, because if you decide to upgrade later, chances are good you might do that, then you'll get the discount if you had gone through our site to begin with. Okay, so make sure you go through our site even if you're just going for the free one. So imagine, you know, getting 20% off a really affordable price already. You get your own domain name with the pro, right? So mine's DerekStoryPhotography.com. And that's what it says. It doesn't say portfolio box dot whatever. It says www, in my case, HTTPS, right? Because they made it a secure site that didn't cost me anything more. DerekStoryPhotography.com. Okay. Check this out. It is really a good tool. By the end of the week, I will have our next featured photographer up there. So you got to make sure you go to our Facebook page. So I would go check out Dan's image right now if you haven't already. And then near the end of the week, check out, see who the new image is drawn from our directory of Portfolio Box Pro users. As I said, there's a tile on all the pages of Digital Story. Click on it. Learn more about this exciting platform, this affordable, exciting platform, and become part of our Portfolio Box Pro directory. And who knows, I might feature one of your shots too. Flickr rolls out a fresh look to its galleries. Woo-hoo! That was a terrible woo-hoo, wasn't it? All right, let me read you this blurb from the Photographer about it, and then I'm going to tell you about the really great impact it has on our community. So here's what Photographer has to say about it. Heads up, Flickr users. The platform has recently revamped its galleries so that you might want to take a look at what has changed if you haven't been making galleries of your favorite works by your favorite creatives. According to the Flickr blog post announcing the long overdue revamp, the all-new galleries now showcase photos and videos in much larger layout to take advantage of today's new screen sizes and resolutions. The limit on photos that users can add to galleries has been increased from 50 to 500. They also added a new modal batch for adding photos straight from our faves. The gallery's list page has also been giving a nice refresh, and we now can see a triptych of photos with the cover photo being slightly larger than the next two most recently added ones. The gallery metadata at a glance also comes in a new card style that Flickr uses in the gallery itself. All right, so that's the blurb from Photographer, and they are absolutely right. This has a really nice impact on us because I use the gallery feature on Flickr to curate our TDS member photo of the day that I post on Facebook. You know, the image goes on Facebook and, you know, lasts there for however long, a day or two, before it gets pushed down. But then I also curate that image in a Flickr gallery, and we have a ton of galleries. And if you go to our gallery page, you are going to see amazing shots curated over years now from your peers in this community. And it is really beautiful. And this new look that they have given the galleries just highlights these images and just breathes new life into them. I have to tell you, it's really cool. So I have a link to our member photo galleries page that's on Flickr, and that's in the show notes. And if you're on the Digital Story site, you can get there that way too, really easily. Just click on photo gallery in the top nav. That'll take you over to our Flickr page, and then you'll see galleries in the nav bar there. Just click on that, and it will take you to this beautiful galleries page. Right now we have 35 galleries that we've been archiving since, oh, I don't know how long here. And they are just fantastic. You've got to do this. You've got to go over and take a look and see what your fellow and fellowette photographers have been doing and how beautiful their work is. And of course, now this just keeps going. As I do a new member photo of the day, then that gets added to the current gallery and onward and onward. Something that I'm very proud of, you know, showcasing the work of our members. Go over there and give it some love. comment on the photos, give it some likes, and enjoy yourself. I think you'll have a great time. And big thanks to Flickr for cleaning up this area and modernizing it. It really made me happy. Inner Circle members, New York Fine Art greeting cards. So we've done round one of this on our Patreon site for our Inner Circle members. And if you weren't listening last week, the gist of it is I'm going to create a set of fine art cards from my New York trip. I was shooting specifically for that. And what I want to do is I want to involve our Inner Circle members in the final choices. So each week I'm publishing two shots, and it's going to be one or the other. This first week went really well. It was so much fun. Those of you that commented, thank you so much. Because not only did everyone comment on, you know, which shot they liked better, but they really got into a discussion about why they liked one shot and, you know, what maybe they didn't like as much about the other shot. And there's a whole lot of commentary. I'm telling all of you that this is really useful to me because when I go to do the final versions of these shots before I print, you know, what you're looking at now is somewhere in the middle, right? A little more than draft, but not final. I'm going to not only go with what you guys pick, I'm also going to incorporate a lot of your suggestions. So this is really neat. Now, another part of this is that each week, one of those commenters will get selected and receive a free set of cards once they have been printed, which will be next month. And we have our first winner. And this week's winner is Edward J. Shields. Edward J. Shields, who is one of our Inner Circle members who commented on the photos, who gave some feedback. Edward, thank you so much for being a part of our Inner Circle and a part of our life here. I think you go by Ed, as I recall. But Edward is what it says on the site there. And congratulations. Later this week, I'm going to send out another pair to all of our Patreon members, and we're going to do it again, and I will pick a winner out of next week's comments, and we're going to do this four times. So there'll be four pairs, four winners. The first one is Edward J. Shields. It might be you next week. If you want to participate, you just can become a member of our Inner Circle by clicking on the link in the show notes or by clicking on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. I'm also going to use this opportunity to thank our Patreon members for your ongoing support. It means so much to this podcast, and I truly appreciate it. We're going to keep doing more things like this because it's fun, and I just want to do stuff, you know, with this select group of supporters. Finally, I want to give a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper, who, by the way, will supply the paper that we do the fine art cards on. And I'm still debating about which stock I'm going to use. You know, I'm going with black and white images on this, and so I'm leaning towards, you know, the Arctic Polar matte surface for the cards. That nice, clean white, doing those black and white images on it, I think it'll give them a lot of pop. So I haven't made a final decision yet. But, you know, these are the sort of options that I have because I work with Red River Paper. They are my paper provider. And not only do I have all the options in terms of how I shoot the image, how I process the image, but then how the final image looks by using all these different types of paper stocks to really give it the final look and feel that I want these images to have. They're the longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. They have a tile on all the pages. Click on that tile, go over, look at the landing page. I get notes constantly from people who finally took the printing leap and bought their first box of Red River Paper. And almost always they write me afterwards and thank me for, you know, urging them to do this and how satisfying printing is for them and how beautiful the paper is. So it's win-win-win all the way around. Red River Paper, they also have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Alrighty, that is going to do it for me this week. All right, how did I do? Did I curb my enthusiasm a little bit? Very hard. I have to tell you, I dig the Fujifilm XF10. I'm very excited about this camera. I can't wait to do more shooting with it. Hope you enjoyed my review. Come back next week. I'm working on more goodies for you. Lots to talk about. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.